And remember, we just won two conferences with Sammy Coffey.
Right, right, right.
So I was not part of that Grand Slam.
Okay, that's right.
So that would have been special to be able to say that I was part of a Grand Slam team as a player and a coach, right? So I wasn't part of that. People don't realize that when they think back to it. But so I missed out on that. But again, I think other opportunities opened up because of that. But heading into that Ginebra stint, just a little uncertain, just a little bit surprised.
Yeah.
That it was being offered to me. And I remember one of my first questions to Coach Tim was like, I'm like, Coach, can I just stay? I go, and then let's talk about it more if they're really serious at the end of the season. Because we're about to, you know, bring Blakely back. And,
right.
And you know, we have a good chance of winning this, whatever. So I'd like to still be part of this. And, you know, it gives me time to learn also, whatever. And at least mentally prepare myself that, hey, you're going to be given a chance to really lead a team. And I said, Jeff, I don't know if you have a choice.
All right, in 5, 4, 3.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Let It Fly podcast, season 2, of course, powered by our friends from Smart. My name is Tin Gamboa.
Hello, hello. It's Gabe Norwood here.
If you are looking for the two other guys, so are we.
Yes, absolutely. What's up? Where you guys at, man?
Why did you leave us hanging? No, but we did get a suitable replacement.
It's true. I mean,
better looking for sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Maybe a better shooter than Mo.
Shots.
Dang, it's easy to take shots right now. No rebuttals, nothing.
I know, yeah.
I'm kind of liking the setup.
Maybe we're going to tell the guards to not let those guys. No, we're kidding. We miss you guys a lot. Good job in the other episode. We'll see you in the next one. But today we have with us an 8-time PBA champion, a 10-time PBA All-Star, the 1995 PBA Rookie of the Year, a PBA Grand Slam winner with his jersey number retired by both Alaska and Coca-Cola. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Jeffrey Carriasso.
Hey, guys.
Welcome. Jeff, a man who wears many hats, father, husband,
yes.
Coach,
entrepreneur,
owner of a thriving business. Thank you for making time for us,
no,
Coach Jeff.
I'm happy to be here, 10, Gabe. Thanks for the invite.
No problem.
Thank you for having me.
Are you also happy that the two other guys are here?
I'm not going to say anything. But yeah, it would have been nice for them to be here, but no worries.
For sure.
Promise it's better that they're not. So, okay, Coach, why don't we start at the very beginning? Because every time we have guys here, especially Phil Ams, we always ask them, what brought you to the Philippines? How did you find yourselves in the Philippines? And it's always a great story.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Gosh, you're making me recall back to...
Not so far
93,
away.
93, but not too far away. But no, my journey started, honestly, in California when, you know, all over California Bay Area, there's a lot of Filipino community there. There's a lot of basketball tournaments there. So pretty much the basketball community knows each other. So 1 year, they're forming a team to come here and play as a guest team in the PBL.
Oh.
So the D-League... used to be called the PBL.
That's right.
And that was a stepping stone. No other leagues, stepping stone before the PBA.
Mm-hmm.
So college, PBL, and then PBA. So, yeah, I got on that team from California, came here. And we were part of the PBL conference where there's a lot of teams there, a lot of good players, where Noli Luxin was still there, Johnny A., Vic Pablo. A lot of good players who were joining the draft not that year and obviously succeeding after. When I got here, they wanted me to stay.
Okay.
So you know, initially it was supposed to be just a vacation, just a short stay.
It was going to be just a group of Phil Americans coming here to play. And everyone on my teammates were all either married or they had steady jobs.
Oh, wow.
But they just loved to play. And, you know, a few had basketball background playing in college back home. I was the youngest one. I was the one that, you know, hey, would you like to try and play for a college out here and see how it would go? And then not many people know this, but I was supposed to play for LaSalle.
Oh.
Wow.
Right.
Damn.
DLSU.
Coach.
So the year where Jason was there. Gosh, let me try
Mark
to recall.
Delan.
Mark, it was actually before Mark.
Oh, before Mark.
Okay. Yeah. And then the Lago brothers. Mm-hmm. Dwight was already in the PBA, but his brother Elmer. Elmer was there. Anyway, so supposed to play there, practicing for a couple weeks with the team, and then all of a sudden, I don't see the coach, the guy who recruited me. You know, I find out, okay, he might not be part of this team.
Oh, wow.
I was a little stuck. I was stuck. I didn't know what to do. I was honestly going to come back and fly back home. Mm. So I was like, wow, what a quick trip. Practice for 2 weeks at LaSalle. The coach did not endorse me to whoever to stay. Mm. I guess I was his kind of catch or recruit. Right. Right. So he was like, you know, whatever. And then one morning I'm staying with my aunt's at my aunt's house. She'd give me the tabloid magazine every morning newspaper. And in the back of it, right, is the sports.
That's right.
And there's in a small box underneath in a corner, it said, PBL tryouts, Nikon will join the PBL tryouts in Dumlao Gym.
Dumlao.
Yeah, the dungeon, the old school, you know, Dumlao on Shaw Boulevard, yep. Right? Like, you're really practicing like in a cave, right? That's how it felt like. So, yeah, well, once I saw that, went to the tryouts, and the rest is history, to be honest with you.
So how old are you at this point?
At that point, I was 21.
21. So 21, 21 prior to that experience.
Right.
You know, just tapping back into your, like, your Filipino culture, right, your heritage. How often were you back here in the country?
I was only, that was probably my third time in my life.
Third time, okay. Yeah.
So I went when I was a kid, went another time when I was a young teenager.
Okay.
And then after that, that's it. That's
21.
Yeah.
And got right to
and
it.
And right to it, right. So, yeah, it was interesting because, you know, you really, although this is our country, right? And this is where my parents grew up and they were born and raised here. And this is where you call your roots, right? Like you said. But it's still a foreign country to you growing up in the States and just, you know, living there and being raised there. Coming here, you didn't know anybody. Yeah. It was really just basketball who that kept me, you know, sane, I guess.
Yeah.
Kept me motivated and, you know, that was it. I just needed that one first step and it worked out.
It definitely worked out. Who were your first few friends in the basketball circle when you first
I guess
here?
I'd have to mention just guys I played with, right?
Right.
Because they're, you know, my first teammates were my first friends. But I'll never forget, I mean, they're still good friends now. Merwin Costello.
Oh, yeah.
You know him?
Yes.
And the Costello brothers. You know,
Alaska.
Yeah. Okay. That group.
Kind of curly-haired guy.
Yeah. Noli Loxin is one. I mentioned him already because he was part of my teammates. Ray Vangalista.
Ray. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ray. So they were the two vets on that team that we were on, and they went up to the PBA a year ahead of me.
Okay.
So those two kind of led the way for us. And Udoy Belmonte played a little bit for San Miguel. Those guys were part of my start here.
Man, hearing those names, these were players that I grew up watching.
That's
blast from the past. What were the biggest adjustments that you had to face, not just on the court, but off when you came over here?
I think when you come from the States like I did, your adjustment is really mainly off the court.
Yeah.
Right? Because the basketball is like...
Is it the same?
Easy.
Pretty it's, much, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you play and then, you know, you're competitive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you... give your best, but just adjusting to the heat. That's the stuff everyone complains about. You know, the heat, the traffic.
The traffic.
I lived in Capitolio at the time.
Okay.
That's where the quarters of the team was at. Mm. And there's no water.
Oh, damn.
Gabe, there's no water.
That's different.
So I'm like.
That's different. I had my own personal complaints, but I did have water. Thank you, Happy. Boss, thank you for taking care of me. I did have water. I appreciate you in the PBL.
So think about living in a place and there's no water. So a truck would come by, I want to say once a week. And once we saw that truck, whatever you had, you could fill water and you ran out of the house and filled it up.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, that was a struggle. That was tough. And, you know, and I don't know if you want to call it a spoil, but you're used to having a washing machine. Just throw your clothes in a washing machine.
Right.
And and it's clean. Here, you got to learn how to wash by hand.
Oh, so you did that. So I'm like, nice.
Okay. And you know, my local teammates are teaching me how to do it.
Yeah.
They're laughing at me because I don't know how to do it and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, it's after a while you learn to adjust. That's sure. really it.
And now, marunong ka na maglaba, which is great. Marunong na
maglaba. Yeah, right.
These are some life skills that you can use forever. Yeah.
I think I could learn at that age, right? You're like, all right.
So usually for athletes that grew up here, right, after 5 years in the UAP, that's when they make the jump to the PBA. How did you feel that, okay, the PBL done?
Yeah.
Moving up.
Right. I felt like it was a good time. I felt I was ready and... Mm-hmm. And
you were ready. You became rookie of the year.
Right. For sure.
It was, you know, I got to know the guys in my batch. So guys like Dennis Espino, Kenneth Remdes.
Mm. Yeah.
EJ File. So those are the guys that was in my batch. Marlo Aquino, but he ended up staying for another year. Mm-hmm. And then he came up to the PBA after. But yeah, those guys. And just being around them, you know, I felt like they were my batch, is what I felt like. I'm like, you know what, let's try our luck and go from there.
No, I mean, to enter the PBA, you know, everybody has their personal attachments to generations, but it's hard to argue that was the glory days, right? Yeah. Everybody refers to that time, late 80s, mid to late 80s, early 90s, as the prime of the PBA. And just entering the league, being a rookie, like, just to explain to us that experience, that anticipation for you. You know what I mean? Naturally, you came out here as a kind of a guest team in the PBL to go through the process of not going to college here and having those ups and downs. And now all of a sudden, you're thrust into the PBA in this huge, huge kind of microscope, being such a top pick, a high pick in the draft.
Sixth pick
in the draft.
Right. And you know this, Gabe. You know, when you are a part of a pro league, wherever you are, and for us, we're blessed to be part of the PBA, and I honestly believe that there's a confidence that you have to kind of bring, right? And you know, and there's a confidence about you that you need to kind of uphold and maintain.
Yeah.
And when I was watching, and I was still in the PBL, I always believed that I could play in the league. I would watch the PBA games all the time. And I said, one day I'm going to play there and I know I can, you know, last.
Yeah.
And that's something that I made sure, you know, that I would, I guess, prove to myself daily, you know?
Yep.
And just bring it. Just, it's, you need to have a confidence in you. So you're careful, you know, I think you guys know, you know me. You're careful to be humble, which is the most important thing. But at the same time, you got to bring a little something where, hey.
Is it hard to?
You're touching like a little bit of arrogance, a little bit. Because you're like, hey, you know, you got to be able to last because, you know, this guy's trying to take my job. This guy's trying to take my job. And you're already considered, quote unquote, and it's a little bit more, I guess, it's out there a little bit more during that time. But you are still a foreigner coming in and taking over a spot for a local.
Right.
So that's why when the influx of the Phil-Americans and Phil-Foreigners came in 99, 2000, that was one of the comments that you hear from everybody.
Yeah.
You're taking away a job from the locals. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know? So that was sort of like the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's why I always say, day one, you'd always have to understand that us coming in here is really like you going into someone else's house.
Mm.
You're a visitor in that house, right? How do you act when you're a visitor in someone's house?
Yeah.
That's how you act here. Like, you go out there and try to kill on the court.
Right.
You try to win. You try to, you know, I'm going to attack you. I'm going to kill you today.
Right.
Whatever, trying to get the win. But you're a visitor at someone's house.
Right.
And you maintain that approach, then the locals will appreciate you. And, you know, talk Tagalog. Mm-hmm. Talk Tagalog and sound stupid.
Yeah.
You know, let them laugh at you. That was my secret. You try to speak Tagalog and then slowly but surely you get a little bit more comfortable and you can talk a little bit more Tagalog, you know? So those are the ones that laugh. Those are the guys that last.
Ang ganda na nga ng accent mo na, Coach. No,
really. It's a little better. Yeah, it's a little
much
better.
Much better than these guys, for sure.
Yeah. I think the difference is, Tin, is at home in San Francisco, I was always spoken to in Tagalog.
Okay.
So Pops was always like, oh, Jeff, I know let's go away. Like that. Oh, Jeff, kaya na, come home. I know, tama na yan. He'll always get mad at me and tell me what to wear. Always in Tagalog.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about you, Gabe, but I was always able to understand it. Were you able to understand Tagalog?
For a bit. I mean, I grew up with my Filipino side really until I was five.
Okay.
You know, I mean, in terms of entire family. Yeah, in Hawaii, that's where they are migrated to.
Yeah.
So from there, it was pretty distant. My Lola's also speaks Bisaya, so it was not Tagalog that I was hearing a lot of times also. Yeah. But I can understand that. Yeah. It's just the constant.
Right. We're a typical Filipino family, just lived in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So imagine that.
Yeah.
So that's all. So we'd eat everything Filipino, and my dad, my Lola, my mom talked to me Tagalog. So I was always able to understand. It's just that once you leave the house, everything's English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that part of you. But I'm happy that I'm always able to understand. You know, at least understanding is crucial.
Right.
You just work on the speaking. So.
Nah, for sure.
Is that advice that you think you can still give to the younger players who are coming in? Learn Tagalog, speak Tagalog.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, you want to make sure that you do your part. To be part of what's happening to you. You know what I'm saying? And this is part of it. When and not just for you personally, but the team that you're on, the one that's investing in you, and you're doing the same vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, the talk about the dream is done. I mean, the PBA, it's always been a dream. That's done already. Now, what are you going to do to stay?
Yeah.
So when you want to stay, then you give yourself a little bit more. You learn Tagalog. You learn there's a different humor. Right?
True.
The jokes.
True. Deliveries of jokes.
Deliveries. And even the understanding of punchline. So you want to be corny like that.
And if
guys see that you're okay and you're corny, then, you know, they'll accept you even more.
When in Rome, right?
Yeah, exactly.
When in Manila.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Definitely.
Can we go back a little bit to draft day? Can you take us through what you were feeling? What number did you expect to go? Yeah. Did you expect to go at 6th?
Yeah.
What was the buzz? What was the buzz?
That's a good question because I knew I was entering the draft with EJ and Dennis and Kenneth, the guys I mentioned earlier. And depending on the need of the team, it's really, you can go 1 or 4. I don't think I was going to go 1. Dennis was a stud.
Yeah.
Dennis Espino. Gosh, stud. Power forward. He was your younger Alvin Patrimonio a little bit. And just solid.
Yeah.
And that guy, Kenneth, right? You see Kenneth?
Mm-hmm.
He was really my arch rival. Like the whole years in the PBA would always battle, always go against each other. EJ being 7-footer, right? Mm-hmm. You need a big guy. There's no one bigger than EJ, right? So 1 of 4. But so prior to that, I don't know if you remember, guys, we were us four and Marlo, we were practicing with the San Miguel team.
Okay.
In 94. 94, San Miguel wins the All-Filipino.
Right.
And they are going to represent the Philippines in the Asian Games in Japan.
Okay.
In 94, right? So previously they won it. So what they wanted to do was pick up 4 or 5 PBL players to join them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say to beat them up because we were the younger ones, but I guess some young guns to join that team. So to make a long story short, we were on that team, but the guys who made the lineup was only Marlo and Kenneth.
Okay.
Okay, so us three, we kind of got left behind. No worries. Good experience practicing with the San Miguel team and Hector Calma, Alan K. Dick, oh my gosh, Otto Augustine, all those guys. Those guys that won the Grand Slam too.
Yeah.
So during that year, Coach Norm was like, if there's a chance to get any one of you guys gonna get any one of you five would be good. So San Miguel picks number, and don't get me wrong, I love Coach Norm. But don't worry, we're gonna pick you up. And then San Miguel picks, and then I'm like, okay, the three left already. Marlo's not joining. Gosh, I might go with San Miguel. yeah, that's
cool. My assassin coach.
I know them. Yeah, I met them a little
coach
bit.
Coach Norm told me.
Like, Coach Norman told us. He's like, but then San Miguel picks at number 4 or 5. Brian Poncelan.
That's not Jeffrey Cariasso.
Is that me? You don't get wrong. Nothing against Brian. He, you know, great player. He was obviously in played against him in the PBL. But so I was expecting to go there.
Yeah.
And then 5 was someone else. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll go here. And, you know, I just fell into the laps of Alaska.
Man.
What a lap to fall on.
Right, right. And again, it's one of those things where you're meant to be will happen.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
I trust that and I believe that. And that's what happened.
That's a blessing. So walk us through. We mentioned as a part of all your accolades to walk into success right away. Your rookie year, not just the awards, but also the games themselves, championships. Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? You walk into this situation that, you know, many would dream of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Talk us through your first year in the league, the difference maybe also from the PBL to the PBA right. at that time.
Right. Well, you know, it was clearly, you know, the level of play is really so much higher in the PBA. And you're going against guys who've been in the league for so many years. I was just fortunate enough, and why I say it's a blessing to be part of that Alaska team was because with me coming in there, it worked out for me because there wasn't super pressure to kind of, okay, you got to be our guy now, and you're, you know, you got to fill in these shoes. It wasn't like that. It's like, Jeff, play a role. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay.
Easy enough.
He's like, we have Johnny, we have JoJo, we have Bone Hawkins. Pochuino is underrated big guy. Just play your role. I said, okay. Like, what do you want me to do? He's like, just play your game, you know? And then it just worked out where, you know, Gabe, I love guys like you. And you play both sides of the court. And I kid you not, in all my camps, I teach them how to play both ends.
Yeah.
You got to love to play the defensive end as much as you love the offensive end. That's what I always tell them. Anyway, so I kind of focus on that. I'm going to get maybe 5 or 6 shots a game. Okay, but I'm going to focus on defending.
Yeah.
So I made it a point where I want to guard the best player of the other team.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're the imports.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I stop them. Of course not, because they're good players. But they didn't intimidate me because they're used to, you know, guarding guys in the States and it was nothing, you know, and they're just like normal guys. And that's what helped me develop that part of my game. So, and then I got more confident moving forward, and really your overall game just kind of evolves. And without that pressure initially, then you slowly kind of get to that mode that you want to. You know, and I was spoiled.
Yeah.
You know,
early success.
First 2 years, we made the finals all 6 times.
Crazy.
That's wild.
Right?
Domination.
And then I move, and then I don't make it again until 2002, right?
Dang.
That's what happened. So I don't mean to jump. I don't mean to jump.
I didn't realize that's how big the gap was.
Right. So I didn't make a finals again until I went back to Coke. So that was after Mobiline. That was after Tendwai. So God was saying, okay, here, get spoiled, 6 straight championships, get some experience.
Right.
You know, win some rings. Okay, then if you're going to make a decision to move, and I did, you got to own up to it, then you kind of go through the hard part.
Yeah.
Now I'm the main guy. Now we're developing and growing. Yep. And so, yeah.
Man. Man. That's wild. I didn't realize it was that big of a I can only imagine walking into success. Like, me and Saul always joke with Jared, because Jared walked into success with TNT in our rookie year when they had him, Jason, Ryan Reyes, Kelly, Ali Peak, you know, Dell, Jimmy. Like, they were running things for a while.
Right.
And it took me and Saul some time.
Took a while, right?
You know what I mean? Even being the conversation to win a championship and to kind of go back.
Right.
You know what I mean? That had to be challenging for you as a player.
Right.
And with that said, like, what was that scenario like for you when you moved from Alaska, when that trade went down, and were you prepared for it? Like, you kind of touched on it a little bit, saying that you asked for it. That it was something you wanted.
Yeah.
Can we get a why?
Yeah.
The move from The move from Alaska to Mobiline was through an offer sheet. And right now, that's not even available anymore.
Right, right.
Right. So, although I think there it is, but there's just an agreement not to make it available. Does that make sense?
Are we saying what we're saying?
Does that make sense?
The fans will understand what you're trying to say, Coach.
I think you know. So, yeah. No one offers nobody anything. Mm. So I was able to, you know, I felt like at the end of my second year at Alaska, to be honest with you, like I wasn't expecting JoJo money, Lastimosa money, Abrientos money, no. But at least an increase in what, you know, you signed originally for the 2 years. So I came up with a number that I felt was fair, but it was still hard for them to give.
Yeah.
So, and then you get an offer from, again, that's why I bring up Coach Norman. Siguro dito siya bumabawi. He just took over Mobiline. And he's like, Jeff, you're expiring. He said, don't sign yet. We'll offer you something. And then he was very aggressive because, you know, he was trying to rebuild that team.
Right.
That team. That was before the Talk and Text team that you just talked about with JD. So when it showed me the offer sheet, it was, I want to say triple.
Wow.
Man.
That I wasn't even asking for.
Yeah.
So what that number I wasn't even asking for.
Yeah.
I was like, oh gosh, okay, all right. So you get, of course you get advice. It's the first time for you to go through something like that.
Right.
So you get advice from people you trust. Get advice. Everyone had the same advice. It's like, why are you even asking?
Right?
You're thinking twice about it. Right? You're being crazy if you're gonna think twice. So you know, eventually I said, all right, I'll go ahead and sign it. Just because if you sign that, that's a guarantee.
Yeah.
That's what you're gonna make.
Yeah.
And again, remember, put things in context. It was the first time I've ever been offered that.
Right.
And you know, and it is significantly bigger. So whether you're going to get that from Mobiline because Alaska can't match it or Alaska needs to match it.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, I was hoping, Alaska, match it. Come on, please.
So you wanted, in your heart of hearts that time, you wanted to stay. Yeah.
Okay, we just won a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Just won a Grand Slam.
Like, why would you want to?
That's why, I think Coach Tim was a little pissed, dude, that I signed it. He's like... that's how I went. And then, you know, that's when I got traded to Tandwai. And then, so you go to like, you go through like 2.5 years, 3 years of again, trying to get guys together and developing and trying to compete with the San Miguels.
Right.
But it's not that easy. I mean, again, life isn't perfect. So, yes, your role is bigger. Mm-hmm. Compared to my 2 years at Alaska.
Your bank
Your bank account's a little bit more, right? Right. But then you're with a team that's kinda, you know, in the middle and that are waiting for pieces to get to back to the championship level.
Yeah.
So that's the sacrifice.
Man.
Yeah. Was it worth it? Were there any regrets at all?
No regrets, honestly. No regrets at all. I think it was worth it because when you strictly talk about those two situations where you're at Mobiline and you're at Tandwai, and then you get to Coke. Mm-hmm. When you get to Coke, this is where, for me, and you know, I've been very blessed, like I said, Coke is where everything just fell into place.
Right.
So, again, we talked about earlier, it's either... you're not playing as much, but you're making good money. Or you're playing a lot, but your guys aren't winning.
Yeah.
Or any of the combinations, right?
Yeah.
Coke is where everything happens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Coke is where you're making good money, you're playing, right? And you know, you're the main guy on the team, you're getting awards, and you're winning championships.
Yeah.
Or everything fell into place. I'm like, ooh, this is a great 3 years. Great 3 years. Rudy Hatfield. Who else? Rafi Rivas. Will Antonio, Rob Wainwright, you know, those guys.
Yeah.
All those guys.
That's a fun group right there.
Oh,
if anybody has been around any of those names mentioned, That is a hilarious group. Rob Wainwright, still, he was my vet when I got in the league, my rookie year. Funniest people. Yeah,
love that dude. Love that
on
dude,
the face of the earth. Next to Joe, him and Joe.
Oh, Joe's the best.
Joe's up there,
Joe loves you.
Joe's up there, too. Yeah, he's on my list.
Hey, you guys, real quick. Stream Let It Fly in Epic Live Sports for free on the Smart Livestream app. Watch PBA, UAAP, FIBA games, and more available to all networks. Download it now on the Apple App Store or Google Play or watch via web browser on smart.com.ph/livestream. Now back to the regular program.
You think the struggles you experienced after you left Alaska before you went to Coke made you appreciate your time in Coke even more?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Made you appreciate your winning times at Alaska, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the lesson learned there was how hard it is to really make the finals.
Yeah.
To win it. It's difficult. I'm sure Gabe knows. You know, so right? So once you're there, you do everything to reach that goal, because it's not often you have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, really, really tough. Really tough.
Tough, but memorable.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
unforgettable. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of unforgettable, can you give us some of the standout memories that you have with Coca-Cola?
With Coke, gosh. So many. Just because Coke was coming in as a new team. I forgot which franchise they were taking over. But Coach Chott was a coach.
Yeah.
And in our Cinderella conference, we won a championship.
Mm-hmm. Man.
So that says it all there.
Crazy. Yeah.
And to maintain that and keep going, we made the finals three more times. So four in total.
Mm.
And we won bookends. So the first one and the last one. And like I said, you know, that's where everything comes into play, you know. And by that time, I'm in like my early 30s and
peak.
You're still kind young.
Of like at your peak.
Yeah.
And you see things differently, right? You view things differently. You pretty much you mature, right? A little bit. So you appreciate things a little bit more. Now your role steps into a different kind of specter, I guess, and you're teaching the young guys now.
Yeah.
Now you're a mentor. Now you're how JoJo and Johnny and Bone was to me.
Yeah.
During that time when I was at Alaska, and you're guiding, and you're actually a best friend sometimes, because they don't just talk to you during when you're on the court, right?
No. For sure.
You know, and they start calling you Kuya, can we talk? You know, stuff like that. And now you're a counselor a little bit, and now you're a big brother pretty much. So. But yeah, that's something that I will never forget and really appreciate, because it's part of the development, part of the growth. And you know, I hope I made some sense to a few people. So.
No, I'm sure. I mean, there's no accident that you're in a place of leadership now.
Yeah.
You know, we've had other guests on that we say there's no flukes in it. You know what I mean? We were called to lead, and it's prevalent and seen throughout the course of your career. Mm-hmm. And during your time at Coke, who were some of those young guys that, you know, you felt were under your wing and you really got to impact while you're there?
Guys like Leo Avenido.
Leo.
Jack Chia.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I remember Jack.
Jack.
FEU Ateneo.
Yeah.
Mm. We drafted Ray Hugnatan.
Really?
So Ray's first 8 years after he played 40, right? He played like 40 years. But. So Ray just retired like yesterday, right?
Right.
But his first 8 years, we were together.
Okay.
So four at Alaska, and then at Coke 4 years, and then we got traded together to Alaska. Back to Alaska.
Oh, that's wild.
And then they traded Peak and John Arrigo.
Arrigo, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that was the year before I got in the league. I
think so. When did you enter? 20?
I was 08.
So that trade happened, and when we went back to Alaska, 2004.
Okay. Because I remember the first time I met you, Jeff, was I was living with Tony De La Cruz.
Right.
I was trying out for the national team. Actually, I'd made the national team. I hadn't played yet in the PBL, and I was in the locker room with you guys all the time.
Okay.
You guys were playing talking text in the finals.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
And yeah, I still remember the first time I got to watch you play. Right. And I know this isn't on our list of questions, but I was just thinking, in terms of style of play, like, you used to run off of screens. Like, it was like Richard Hamilton type stuff. Like, I remember having to chase you and then watching you do that. Was that always, like, a part of your game? Like, how you learned the game growing up? Was it, you know, your footwork was always on point? You used your jabs. You got to everything, got to your spots.
Right.
Was that something that I'm sure it was taught to you at some level, but what was your focus from the offensive standpoint? What did you feel like was your specialty, your superpower on the offensive end?
Well, I was always known to be able to get to the basket,
right?
Attack hard,
right?
And I'm sure the players now in Blackwell, they hear me say that enough. I'm always like, attack the basket, attack the rim.
Yeah.
Like, none of this, you know, and nothing against it, but none of this sidestep, Euro, let me flick the ball off the board. And I'm like, attack the rim. That's how I used to play, just pretty hard nose, right? So I think that was my style growing up. And you just kind of develop a little bit, right? Your game improves, I think. So you learn how to make reads.
Yeah.
You learn how to attack and keep going if he follows, and be able to use your pivot foot if he does, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then you worked on your complete game, and you work on your shooting,
yeah,
and pull-ups, and then you work on your threes, right? And I can't say I'm not at all like a Jimmy Alapag, who's just, you know, phenomenal on a three-point shot, but that was part of my game that I developed. And you progress into developing that aspect. So now you're able to attack the basket, shoot the three, and then your in-between game, your pull-up game is also, you know, fairly decent and respectful. So that's where you felt like you're kind of, all right, your game is improving, and you've gotten better. And that's what I relied on. I think during that time when you were watching it, it was a moment where you know, you feel like you have a complete game a little bit, and you just challenge yourself to be consistent. And that's the key.
Consistency. You're that kid's consistency.
You're that kid.
That's true.
Coach Jeff, you got to play with all of these guys. You got to play with Gabe,
right?
Saul, JD, and Joe.
And Joe.
So, rank them. No. what were your first thoughts when you first faced these guys?
Man.
Let's go down the line.
So, when these guys came in, it was 2000 and...
Me, Saul, and Jared were 2008. I think Joe was either 2007 or 2006.
Okay, so like, let's go 2006. So that was 4 years before I retired. So at that time, I was 34, 35 years old. And you can just tell. You can just tell that, you know, you guys are going to be the future of the PBA. And that's no question. You know, being able to play in our league and last in our league isn't going to be your worry, you know, because you can tell that you all had game already. It's really just getting used to the Pinoy style.
Right.
Getting used to, you know, at a certain extent, playing at a, you know, in a professional sport or league, you know. But, you know, you guys are all, you know, very, very talented in your own ways. You know, we were supposed to. I was supposed to play with Seoul, but when we drafted him at Alaska, we traded for JDV. So obviously, it turned out, you know, Coach Tim is just a brilliant mind and his vision in his formation of the team. And you know, I think he said there's a lot of guards already. Although there is a talented guard that you can't give up. But when we drafted him, I'm like, okay, cool, young guy. You know, he's going to be – it'll be good to play with him. You know, when you're a vet, you know how it feels now. Yeah. It's kind of nice to be able to play with a young guy where you kind of let him go a little bit, right? And but then we made the trade for Joe and played with Joe for a few years. But, yeah, you know, you could tell. You could tell that you guys are going to be the future. So,
any – memories with Joe that stand out, because Joe is a memorable guy.
He's a memorable guy. He really is. gosh, it's just, you know, so many, I guess, where you go blank, and I'm not lying. But no, Joe is a character, and what made our time together special, because he made it fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He really made it fun. And he's also a competitor. And he competes. So he knows when to kind of, all right, I'm not smiling right now, and I'm going to go out there. And
yeah.
You guys know him. So that's one thing that I remember about him. We'd always tease him because we felt like he was always following Coach Tim. But it just worked out that way.
Teacher's pet.
Right?
Dang, Joe, you never told us this part.
He's going to get mad at me for saying that. But because he used to always joke around and say that I was the son. So all these guys, young Brandon, Mike Cortez, they're like, where's daddy?
Where's daddy?
Daddy's calling you. Right? Or of course, Tim would call me. Jeff, come here, I'm going to talk to you. And I'm like, daddy's calling you. Like that, right? So I get that. So, but then when Coach Tim moved from Alaska to San McCoffee,
yeah,
Joe followed.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to Henebra, mm-hmm. Joe followed. So after a few years of that, I'm like, man, you cannot say that I'm the son. I'm the son? No. Joe, like, you are. You're the son.
Joe Cone. And,
right. That's funny. But again, with all seriousness, like, you can tell, right? You guys had him here. We all love Coach Tim. We learned so much with him. And, you know, and I have nothing but love for him. So.
Mm. Okay, Coach Tim. Okay, first, let me ask you. You were telling us earlier that when you were with Coke, that was when you started being a mentor to the younger guys. Right. At that time, did you already have an inkling like, hey, this is, you know, maybe coaching is something that I could possibly do once I retire?
No.
Like,
no. Oh,
absolutely not. Yeah. Zero idea.
Yeah. It wasn't one of those things where I remember national team in 94. And remember we said we were on that San Miguel team.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so we would have practice games. And Alan K. Dick a couple of times would sit next to me. And like he knew. Like he was on the verge of retiring, whether it was a year or two after. But he was going to retire soon. And he'd always like come talk to me and give me advice. And I'd always appreciate it. But you could tell that he was always kind of like, yeah, we should, you know, like he wanted to be a coach.
Yeah.
He knew. And I kid you not, Tim, I didn't. I did not have that urge. I wasn't part of the plan.
Right.
So that's why it's really, you know, God really does work in mysterious ways because
He does.
He puts you in positions where you don't expect it, right? Mm-hmm. And you think this is where you want to go. And it was always like, oh, maybe I'll just go back to the States and see what I can do there and whatever. It wasn't even put up a camp. It was nothing. It was just... Wow. Basketball's done. What's the next chapter in my life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it opened up where an opportunity opened up where him moving to San McCoffee, he asked me to join him.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how I got into coaching.
Dang.
There you go. Okay. So your daddy. Joe's daddy.
Somebody.
What were some of the things that, you know, you picked up from being his player that you got to use eventually as a coach?
I can't tell you enough how I reflect back and you know, and I quote him, you know, whether I openly admit it or say it, but just to myself, how I'm analyzing, how I'm studying, how I'm preparing the team, mm-hmm. like that. You find yourself saying the same things as Coach did and you know, and that's how much, you know, he has, you know, put into me in regards to, you know, being able to train under him and be a player under him. And then to be a coach under him was also a new experience for me because as a player, it's always, okay, Jeff, you know, you're captain and, you know, this is what I think we need. I need you to do this. I need you to do that. Okay, whatever. So that's all kind of like, he'll call me in the room and we'll talk, whatever, okay. But to sit in the room now as a coach with him, and you're analyzing film and you're talking about lineup, You're talking about schemes and how to defend and stuff like that. That was new. It was kind of different.
Yeah.
There was an adjustment there that I had to make because I'd never been in that setting with Coach Tim before. And then I go, oh, this is why you do this. This is why, you know, you say this. And this is why this is, you know, of the utmost importance to you, especially defensively, because this is the goal. So you're kind of connecting everything now. Oh, okay, that's why you told me this when I was a player, that this is a better way of doing things because of the, you know. So, I got everything, you know, from him, and I learned a lot from him. And you know, there's, you know, aside from the experience from playing, it there's really huge value on what he has shared with us and what I've learned from him. Mm.
Something else.
Right.
Yeah. It's a
basketball mind, for sure.
Sorry. He drafted me.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then he gave me my first coaching job.
Wow.
So I owe my last 28 years to coaching.
Wow.
Right.
If you really think about it.
That's right.
That is pretty crazy.
So 2014 was when you were named head coach of Barangay Ginebra.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell us that story?
Yeah.
And what was going through your head? Were you like, yeah, you know what, I'll do it? Or were you like, am I ready?
Right. I was a little bit more, am I ready?
Mm.
Yeah, that's the honest to God truth. So, and remember, we just won two conferences with Sam McCaffrey.
Right, right, right.
So I was not part of that Grand Slam.
Okay, that's right.
So that would have been special to be able to say that I was part of a Grand Slam team as a player and a coach, right? So I wasn't part of that. People don't realize that when they think back to it. But so I missed out on that. But again, I think other opportunities opened up because of that. But heading into that Ginebra stint, just a little uncertain, just a little bit surprised that it was being offered to me. And I remember one of my first questions to Coach Tim was like, I'm like, Coach, is there, can I just stay? I go, and then let's talk about it more if they're really serious at the end of the season. Because we're about to, you know, bring Blakely back. And, and you know, we have a good chance of winning this, whatever. So I'd like to still be part of this. And, you know, it gives me time to learn also, whatever. And at least mentally prepare myself that, hey, you're going to be given a chance to really lead a team.
Yeah.
And I said, Jeff, I don't know if you have a choice like that. And that's exactly what Coach Tim said to me.
I don't think you really have a choice.
I don't know.
Sounds like a done deal.
Right. Sounds like they really want you to do it. I'm like, okay. You're a little naive when you go into that, right? Because you never coached a team before. Well, how, you know, am I going to have a say in players? Am I going to have a say in trades?
Mm-hmm.
Just the formation of the team. That's why I say that first, and why I said it first earlier when I sat down with the bosses at Blackwater. That was one of the first things we talked about.
Yeah.
Was the lineup, and the formation of the team. Who is responsible for that? Because I don't like to be responsible for the team I'm coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me form the guys I want. Let me get the soldiers I want.
Yeah.
Those questions was, you know, like, no, this is your team and you got to stick with them, and they're a good team.
Yeah.
A decent team, but it's just, I think one of the reasons why the connection wasn't as close than it should from a head coach, players, and relationships was because I played against more than half of those guys.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was coming in like mid-year. Yeah. Was no time to kind of, you know, so... you know, they really needed a coach team.
Yeah.
And I know Coach Frankie took over for, I think, a conference.
Right.
But when they got Coach Tim, that's all they needed. They needed someone like that. They, you know, they needed the daddy, not the kuya.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, right? I was just like, kuya. All right, you're kuya. All right. Kuya, like your older brother, right?
Yeah, man, yeah.
Stop. Shut up.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Kuya, right? Sometimes you feel like you're growing up a little bit. And I played against you, you know. So I'm not saying there was a resistance, but it's just not the same.
Yeah.
And that's the 100% and honest, you know, honest on how things were. Yeah.
So as a player, you know, a lot of players growing up here dream of playing for Ginebra. Can you speak to the pressure felt coaching, from a coaching aspect. You know, we hear the stories. Everybody sees the comments on social media and things like that. Did you feel that mentally? Not to say if you were prepared or not, but how did it affect you mentally from that standpoint, coaching in Evra?
That's a good question. You know, to me, I think the pressure, I mean, you understand coaching in Evra. I've always played against in Evra, and I've loved playing against in Evra because in my championship against them or the big games against them, I always tell this story real quick. In Araneta, we would have our bench and we would have maybe 10 rows.
Yeah.
That's our fan base. So give us 5%. Right? Maybe 10. And then 90% is who? Mm-hmm. All Hinebra. And my motivation was to send 90% home.
Unhappy.
Loved it. Oh my God. Loved it. So wait, now you're coaching them?
Right.
So you thought about the fan base. You knew that there was a big following.
Mm.
But I think it being my first head coaching job, I was still a little naive with how exactly that came to play.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You're just a little like, okay, yeah, I need to have a lot of fans. Okay, but all right, let me just try to get these guys on the same page together.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that there was no pressure, but I think I was a little bit naive and too young at that point as a coach to even process that.
Yeah.
So didn't really feel it. It's kind of, to me, it was more like, all right, let's win. We got a good team. Just got to bring them together, and then, you know, and that was more of the challenge that we were facing. So.
Got it.
We will never have enough time to talk to Coach Jeff. I think so much ground to cover, because I did say earlier on that you wear so many hats, right? Another hat that you tried on was being a sports commentator, a sports broadcaster. True. How was that like for you?
That was a great experience, you know? It's not as easy as people think it is. Mm-hmm. You think you just... You're given a mic and you just talk. But to be honest with you, Tin, my biggest adjustment was just the timing on when to talk. Like this, I'm comfortable now because you're allowing me to kind of babble on, you know, and just talk. There you have to be concise and you got to get to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to say what you want to say within a couple sentences. Yeah. Make sense, know how to end it, and then move on to the next play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you're kind of flowing with the game. That was where I was like, okay, I gotta
you stop challenge.
Talking. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they've gone back 3 or 4 times already. I'm still talking about that last layup by PJ Simone, and I'm, you know. So
I mean, there are greats in basketball, obviously, like the legends. Were there broadcasting, sportscasting legends that you kind of patterned your broadcasting career too?
No, I can't say I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was really just, you know, to me, I was more focused on just be myself.
Yeah.
You know, my wife, Erica, she did courtside, right? You guys know Erica. And she was probably my coach during this. I'm like, and she's like, just, you know, you're talking too much here or you're saying too much.
Yeah.
And
that's so cool. Yeah,
that's her telling me that.
That like, relationship.
Keep your head up, you know, whatever, stuff like that. But I can't say I did pattern myself. I just really wanted to be able to talk in a manner that's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To talk normally.
Yeah.
This is
me.
This is how I view things. This is how I see things. Yeah. Articulate it in a manner where it's still you. You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to be anyone else.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is that those times where you need to show some emotion and be able to kind of make people feel as they're watching that you're also, you know, the emotion is there from your voice as they're watching it, right?
Yes.
So that again was a challenge, but I just try to be me, you know, to be honest.
Achieve.
Yeah, for sure.
I brought this up because earlier on, when the cameras weren't rolling yet, our very own Judd Sulit, who is also part of Let It Fly,
Megwinento
siya na. A shared experience that you guys have.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Why don't you make us cuento?
Oh, that was...
what happened?
Yeah, so the blessing that I currently have, you know, happened, and our good friend Jut was sitting right next to me. So we're both about to do the second game. And as the, so we got to the court early, so the game wasn't finished yet. There was, the first game wasn't finished yet, and there was a couple minutes left on the clock. So we're just kind of sitting there and just waiting for it to be done, waiting for our turn. And then we'll walk up and change the two guys who were doing the first game. And one of the bosses from Blackwater comes to me and says, Jeff, he's like, forgot exactly what his first questions was, but it was more like, you know, what are you doing now? Or, you know, are you coaching or not? And, you know, would it be okay if I get your number so we can talk? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, sure.
That's wild.
You know, and I've never spoken to him before, although I do know who he is.
Yeah.
So we exchanged number. I'm like, thank you, boss. I go, just let me know. He's like, you're not doing anything right now, right? And I'm like, no.
He just covered it that way.
He's sitting there like it's draft day all over again.
You're right. You're like, what's he want? I can't play anymore. Right? I'm tired. You know, so could it be the other thing? You know, like that. So
what happened after that, though? What happened after that conversation? Because according to Judd, like a month and a half later, you were named head coach of Blackwater.
So he told me he'd call me, and he did. The following week, I sat down, had lunch with him.
Yeah.
We had a real good conversation, and then we went to go meet the other boss, his brother, Buster Seldo.
Mm-hmm.
So my second interview, I guess, a part of that process was in their office. And then it just worked out. I will let you know. Call you by Friday, and we'll let you know. And I think they were happy with the interview. And
they called by Friday.
They called by Friday. Yeah, they did. I was like, sure, I'm not doing anything.
That's a blessing, man. Like you said, no accidents, and he works in mysterious ways. You have Blackwater playing great basketball now.
Yeah, a great start so far. You guys.
And you know, but real quick, I know we're closing in on our time. We wanted to touch on your impact off the court. We talked about the commentating. You know, coaching is still not playing on the court, but you're impacting the game that way. But the influence you've had with Titan, man,
huge.
From the collaborations to the events you've been able to put on.
Right.
Shoot, my son, we just watched last night, Orion, when you guys had the Titan court out there.
Yeah.
He had his birthday party out there. You guys hooked us up, and we were able to use the court.
Oh, great.
This was pre-pandemic. He might have been 6 years old. We just watched it last night.
Nice.
But just speak to Titan, how it got started, and you know, you guys are a close group that got that going, and where it is now is unbelievable. Just crazy. To speak on Titan's success.
Titan is special because you know, it really is a group of guys who not only, you know, have full respect for each other, but really we had just one common goal and just really doing our best individually to make this work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I cannot talk about Titan without talking about our, you know, our CEO, our main guy. And, you know, Dennis Tan has just been,
awesome.
You know, tremendous in regards to how successful Titan has become.
Mm-hmm.
And everything points to him, too.
Mm.
So to me, I may be one pillar, you know, with the group, and, you know, there's a few of us kind of holding the fort down a little bit, but I kid you not, everything leads to DT and his leadership.
Yeah.
And nothing won't, you know, we would not be where we are today without obviously his skills and his ability to lead the group. So we always discuss and talk about how did we foresee it turning into what it is today.
Yeah.
And we always say no, like not at all. Like, did you foresee that it's gonna snowball into what it is now? And, you know, for us to imagine that, oh, you know what, one day we are gonna collab with LeBron.
Yeah. Right.
It's saying
and we're gonna call it a Titan shoe, you know, and collab is with him, and you know, he's gonna wear it during one of his games, you know, stuff
crazy.
Like that. And we're like, no. But the one thing that has been consistent and why I would say we're very proud of what we've all done is really just us being able to, I guess, make a mark in Philippine basketball.
Mm.
and in our own way, hopefully helping and improving Philippine basketball.
Yeah.
And everything that we do is for Philippine basketball.
Awesome.
And we know how people love basketball here in the Philippines. And when we opened up in 2010, there wasn't one store that was dedicated strictly just for basketball.
Yeah.
And you would think, well, like, that should be basic because of our love for basketball.
Right.
And, you know, a blessing also because it came at the right time.
Yeah.
And I think when we opened up, it was the country was hungry for something new, something like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stories we tell. And, again, this is DT and the guys and the group. Now, you know, when you start at, when we started in 2010, guys are young who was working under us. You know, they're your mid-level managers and the next ones in line.
Mm-hmm.
They were young, whatever. But now these guys are running it, and because they had 10 years of experience, and they have kind of helped take us to another level.
Mm.
Because obviously, you know, some guys are 20 years younger than me.
Right, right.
And the way they think, the way they see things, it's really, you know, something that you need to kind of enhance the business, right? And they've done that. They've done that. So all credit goes there. You know, the original executives, you know, we're all still there. We still love the brand. We still do our best. But again, the feel and the touch of the younger set of leaders is the one that's kind of helping us, you know, understand the market more, understand what people want to see.
Yeah.
And come on, man, you know, I might post once in a while, but come on, you know, it's not like, all right, we have a schedule like 3 times a day. We're done. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, that's serious. Huh? And like, yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll listen to you, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, happy to be part of this group because, again, we try in our own way, you know, make a mark.
And I
think we have, slowly but surely.
For sure, for sure.
Slowly but surely.
You elevated Philippine basketball for sure. You guys really and truly helped do that.
Yeah.
What is that a product of?
What is it a product of? Oh, gosh. I mean, honestly, if you know... when you think back to when I first landed here in 93 and, you know, me just wanting to play and then you go 28 years later and you're like, okay, did you ever imagine it was going to turn out the way it is now? Of course not, right? Mm-hmm. So that is a product of relationships.
Mm.
Relationships. And I speak highly of that and I share that with a lot of people because That really is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you build relationships, you grow, you learn from them, right? You become a better person because of them, and you nurture and you take care of the ones that are special to you, and things just kind of open up, and you know, I'm not saying that we're perfect or you know we're always a nice guy, but You try to do things the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you hear that a lot, especially coming from our former boss at Alaska, Boss Fredo Itensu. And he was really a stickler of doing the right thing always.
Yeah.
Sometimes you didn't agree with it. You're like, come on, you know, boss didn't like that.
Yeah.
But it's not until after that you realize what he meant and how important it is. So maybe that was also part of my blessing, being Alaska being my first team, that you learn that.
Yeah.
You learn that, you know, do the right things, don't step on anyone's toes, you know, be yourself, have fun, learn from failure, you know, stay humble when you're successful. Mm-hmm. But then you just kind of grow and you know, have good relationships with people, and then you just kind of live your life and things will open up, and I think that's what happened. And I can't, you know, you can't be any more to it than, you know, part of that is luck, part of that is your blessing, you know. A lot of people like that, and it's really just to me, it stems from the relationship that you had. So,
wise words.
Wise words.
Yeah. everyone Wise watching, whether or not you're going to be a basketball player, or an athlete, or just a human being. Yep. Those are wise words. Okay, we're keeping you a little too long, but we can't let you go without asking you.
All right, so we'll get to fly this. Is usually Saul's favorite little monologue that he does, but now it's mine.
Go do it, Gabe.
So before we let you get out of here, Coach, you know, my guy Saul usually does this segment. This is like his thing, I guess. Everybody likes it, and he thinks he's cool when he does it or whatever. But he's not here, so I'm going to do it for him tonight. It is the Let It Fly segment. We have basically, it's the end of practice. You're getting your shots up. We're firing passes out to you. Quick response. Okay. Not necessarily one word, just whatever comes to the top of your head. But you do have a safe word if you want to pass. But you have to let us know, what is your safe word?
Where I can pass?
Yes.
If I say it, then...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just move right on. Okay, no, right. Pleading the fifth. What's your safe word?
My son's name, Jet.
Jet.
Okay, I like that.
That works. So
I'm odd.
Yes, you are very... odd. So Tim's going to get us started. It's 10 questions.
Okay.
Here we go, Coach Jeff. Tatagalugin kita.
Sige lang, go.
All-time best... Gusto ko yung tatagalugin kita, tatagalog accent ko na lang siya. All-time best basketball sneaker, Coach.
Basketball sneaker?
Mm.
Oh. I played in a Jordan 11. The white ones and the black ones. So it's J11s.
Okay.
Yeah, respect that. If you never got into basketball, what would you be doing today?
Honestly, took up psychology in college.
Oh.
So some form of counseling or helping people out in some way. Topic, I probably don't know, but yeah, something like that.
Cool.
Hi.
Cool.
Best coach you've ever played for?
Coach Tim.
Coach Tim. Quick. That was quick. Name one rule that the PBA should change or add.
The Phil-Am rule.
Mm. Okay.
That's a good one. I was always against it because before you're able to join the draft and you're a Phil Foreigner, there's a bunch of documents you need to acquire and get. Sometimes not easy. So that's why some people don't get to join the draft.
Right.
You know that. So once you do that, for me, you're Filipino. And once you're eligible to join the draft, you're a local. Everyone's one. Everyone's okay. It doesn't matter where you're from. So I don't see the purpose of having a limitation with the number of Phil-Ams or Phil foreigners on your team. Right.
Agreed.
Respect that.
Agreed. Odd number. I'm odd. Kung meron kang pwedeng balikan moment sa playing career mo, Coach, alin yung babalikan mo?
I think yung babalikan natin na moments that's special that kind of started and kicked off my career was our first all-Filipino championship at Alaska.
Mm. Mm.
So that was the first one of the Grand Slam in 96 where I made some free throws against Pure Foods.
Good answer. I watched that game.
That's the next question. We're on number six. Which current PBA player do you see yourself or your game in?
Gosh. Oh, that's a tough one. Current. Jet, just because I can't find
that one. Okay,
all right.
Okay.
I respect that.
Okay. Pinaka-paboritong teammate ever?
I'm going to be careful because so many good favorite teammates. But I would have to say... Have to say, Rudy Hatfield.
Mm.
Rudy, awesome.
Ibang kasama yan.
Finish the sentence, Coach. If you played in the PBA today, you would. So if I played in the PBA today, I would.
If I played in the PBA today, I would. Average more than I did before.
No, it's just okay. No. That was the AI response. He went AI on him. 43.
I'm trying to make it fun. I'm just joking. No. If I was playing in a PBA today, I would be more mindful in regards to sharing what a rare opportunity and blessing it is to be in the PBA.
Mm-hmm.
I would also be more mindful in regards to just appreciating more that you know, at the end of the day, you are playing the sport that you love and you're getting paid for it. And you know, I think it's part of your journey and part of your career should also be being able to share your experiences and to help that younger generation in making not just their career better, but again, thinking about the team and thinking about the future of the PBA and just trying to enhance it in a more positive way is probably what I'd focus on.
Respect that.
Beautiful answer.
Our last one to close it out.
Okay.
In our primes, myself, Jared, Saul, and Joe, who are you building a team around?
Ooh.
In our primes.
That is tough. That is tough.
Gabe's the only one here.
Yeah. I'm back at the draft. I'm like, please save me.
Man, that's tough. That's really a tough question. A
lot of success on that board.
I would have to say, only because he's a little bit taller and plays a bigger position.
Yep. Mm.
And the PBA is, you know, we're Asian. So there's a lot of guards,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
wings.
Mm-hmm.
It's only really now, and I'm going to say this. It's only really now. Well, you were kind of ahead of your time, Gabe, in regards to athleticism and length.
Mm.
And to have a guy like you to play 1-4, it seemed like, yeah, especially. But now, if you have that, and a lot of teams do have that,
so
you notice.
Across the board. You guys have a bunch of
right,
it now.
And it's really special. Anyway, to build a team, I would probably build a team. I would have to say Joe.
Yeah.
Only because he'll play that power forward for you. And with his skills, the point forward for you.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, we'll just kind of fill in pieces with the guards, you know, like that. So that's how I see that.
Respect.
Good answer. He's going to be happy.
Point
for
forward.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because Joe does love you. He let us know before we started.
Yes, man.
He does love you, man. So once again, you know, our guy Saul loves to create segments for himself. So he took over the Let It Fly segment. That was his, now mine. And then he likes to ask this other question.
Okay.
Basically, like some change the world, kind of very pageant.
Uh-huh.
Forward.
Okay.
But we're changing it this season. We changed it up our episode before, and we're changing it up this year to more of a New Year's resolution. You know, going forward in your life, not just this year, but like what is something that you want to work on for yourself, you want to change for Jeff Cariasso going forward?
Interesting. I think, you know, now that I'm 50, and it's crazy that I'm...
You said that out loud.
I'm proud of it.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Proud of the... Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Were you supposed to whisper?
I was like, man, that's...
Right? I mean, it's reality.
That's crazy.
But when
that's
you
awesome.
Hit 50, your perspective is different.
Mm.
It, you know, and think about it. When you're younger and you hear someone saying 40 or 7,
right,
52, you know, what's the first thing you think of is you're old. And in the basketball world, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so... You know, be obviously as a player you are. But now that I'm 50, I think I'd have to say the one thing that I'm most conscious about and where I try to, you know, live my daily life, making good choices and making sure you're consistent, is doing whatever it takes to stay healthy, to have a healthier life. And, you know, when we were playing, we could eat everything.
Right? Yeah.
And aside from like the weight gain, you try to, you know, it's easier now, right? You go to McDonald's now, you're 10 pounds, you know, heavier when you get home,
right?
And you step out the car, you're like,
what did I do?
Right? That was like a 30-minute ride.
Exactly.
And, you know, but the effects is not just the weight gain, right? And when you're older, you're more conscious of other stuff, the more serious stuff.
Right.
So really, I think, you know, I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I want to make sure that, you know, I stay healthy for them.
Yeah.
And that's my purpose. That's my goal every day.
Awesome.
Love that. so grateful that you gave us the time. You are a busy, busy man. So thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
One last question is, there's something, a lot of guys idolize Gabe, Saul, JD, and Joe. Yeah. So a lot of young players watch the show.
Yeah.
Is there any advice that you can give them?
Right.
No. As their cuya.
Yeah. Guys, I mean, I
or could, daddy now. Daddy now?
Yeah. Keep it cool,
yeah. Some guys, yeah. Some guys, daddy. No, honestly, we talked about what it's going to take, you know, to last in our league. You know, longevity is crucial. And you know, you feel like as the years have gone by, the stints of players seems to be getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And what's it going to take to last 10 years or 12 years, right? Honestly, it's really just consistency, and we talked about that earlier, and you repeated it, Gabe, and that really is. You have to make sure that you use this time of your life to pretty much stay locked in and to know and understand that this could be gone next year, this could be gone at the end of my contract in a couple years. If you have a two-year contract, let's just put it this way, if you have a two-year contract, what you do today up until that ends is really gonna, you being able to extend and go further and renew depends on what you're doing today until that extends, until you extend. Work ethic, how you are with your teammates, value that you bring in, being able to be coachable, all that stuff. So do that.
Yeah.
Do that. And it's really gonna help your cause, because if you walk into someone's house and you feel like, you know, it's your house, then it's not going to work out for you. And we've seen it happen so many times.
Yeah.
So many times.
I like that analogy, man.
Yeah.
You're a visitor in somebody's house. I like that approach to being respectful. You know what I mean? Still be hardworking, but still having confidence in how you carry yourself and how you present yourself.
Right.
So big fan of that analogy.
Yeah.
You were very respectful of our house.
He can put his feet on furniture.
So well behaved, this
guy. Very well behaved guest. It was an incredible hour of such great conversation. We learned so much. I learned so much. Once again, thank you,
thank you, Coach Jeff,
for being part of the show. On behalf of Joe, JD, and Saul, thank you for not putting your feet on the table, because this isn't ours. Thank you so much, Coach. And thank you, everyone, for watching another episode of Let It Fly. Once again, on behalf of Gabe, Saul, JD, and who am I missing? Joe.
And powered by Smart.
You're powered by Smart. See you in our next episode. Bye, everybody.
Peace.